Okay, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We are a few weeks away from the Seder, so I want to spend today and tomorrow, next week discussing themes of the Seder. So for those of you who are going to be at a Seder, obviously there's going to be at a Seder, you'll have a way of focusing on the Seder, and if you're leading the Seder, it's a way you can guide the Seder. And that will make your preparation. Everyone should be prepared for the Seder. You just don't read a bunch of paragraphs coming in cold turkey to the Seder. You have to make preparations to make it a meaningful Seder. So hopefully this will help. We're going to start with the first source in which the Torah tells us that this Seder night is called a Leil Shimurim. It is a night of watchfulness to Hashem for bringing the Jewish people out of Egypt. This is the night of watching, kept to Hashem by all the people of Israel throughout their generations. Leil Shimurim Hu LaHashem. It's called a Leil Shimurim. It's a night of protection. And therefore, in the halacha, the aspect of that is that when the Seder is concluded, people who have the custom to say the entire bedtime Shema, that goes for a number of pages, and we say that, and the bracha of Hamapil and everything before we go to sleep is to ward off various dangers that can happen overnight. So now we don't have to say all those psukim. We only say the one paragraph of the Shema and the bracha of Hamapil, and that's it. You don't have to say anything more. There are those who even have the custom to keep the door unlocked. You don't have to have it locked. You don't need the alarm system on. It's a night that Hashem is going to protect you. It's a night of protection. And you have to live that way, that it is a night of protection. So the question is, what is the process involved that enables this night to be called a Leil Shimurim, a night of protection? We'll go to the second source. It's a pasuk in Mishle, where King Solomon says the following. Shlomo Melech says that whoever guards his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from troubles. That's a shomer piv ul shono, shomer mitzarat nafsho. So there's a bit of a double expression, guarding his mouth and his tongue. If you guard your mouth and your tongue, what's the idea of the mouth and the tongue? Well, let's see, what do you use your mouth for and what do you use your tongue for? Use your mouth for eating foods and use your tongue for speaking. So therefore, King Shlomo is saying, if you guard your mouth in terms of what you eat,
kosher,
it means you're eating food that is strictly kosher, and you guard your tongue from what you say, the words that you say, you'll be spared from all kinds of troubles. That's what King Solomon is saying. And therefore, on the night of Pesach, as we will show, we are very careful in both of these aspects. We spend weeks and weeks and weeks preparing ourselves to get rid of all traces of chametz. So therefore, the only food we're going to eat by the Seder night is the most kosher food imaginable. It has all the stringencies of food. So we're very careful. We are shomer piv. That's one idea. So far so, we don't even eat kidneys, even products that are bean derivatives, which is certainly not real chametz. We're so careful with kashrus. So that's one beautiful thing. You're watching your mouth. But also there's an aspect of watching your tongue, of what you're going to say. And this is what I want to focus on a lot in terms of the Seder night. I want to focus on this idea. And we want to show you how the Seder night is a tikkun for the kind of speech we've been saying a whole year long. And that tikkun on the speech is really key to what freedom is all about. To what freedom is all about. The rabbis tell us that when a person is in galus, when a person is in exile, when the Jewish people specifically were in exile, not only were they in exile, but their speech was in exile, which needs a bit of explanation. What does it mean their speech was in exile? Meaning, you know, when you're in exile, you don't really have control over your circumstances. You don't have control over your environment. you're not able to get as close to Hashem as you would like to. And there's a certain separation between you and Hashem. Well, that separation affects the person in so many ways, and it affects him even in the way that he speaks. Because we'll see shortly that speech is the most powerful, powerful aspect of the human being. Most powerful aspect of the human being. The Torah speaks about it so much, in so much detail. In Parshas Metzorah, the Torah says, "V'zos Torah Sametzorah." This is the Torah, the Metzorah. The person who gets cured from leprosy is the person who speaks Lashon Hara. And we see that the Zos HaTorah means to say that the entire Torah deals with issues of Lashon Hara. It's one of the few issues, topics, that's in all five books of the Torah. In every book, you've got an issue of Lashon Hara. For example, in the book of Bereishis, you have the idea that the snake spoke Lashon Hara about Hashem. You have the idea that Yosef spoke Lashon Hara about his brothers. In the book of Shmos, when Moshe was asking God, he's asking God, I don't understand, why are the Jews suffering so much? And when Dothan and Aviram related to Parah, how Moshe had killed an Egyptian officer because he wanted to save him from the person that the Egyptian officer was beating on, they told that to Parah. Parah wanted to kill Moshe. And Moshe said, "Ochei nota davor." Now I understand why Hashem is doing these things to the Jewish people. They talk Lashon Hara. Parshas Vayikra, Sefer Vayikra has two parshios, Tazri and Mitzorah, that deals exclusively with this issue of Lashon Hara. In the book of Bamidbar, we have the story of the spies who spoke Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael. And Miriam, they did not learn from Miriam, who spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe. And again, in Sefer Dvarim, Hashem reminds the Jewish people of the Lashon Hara they spoke about at the Mon. So throughout the five books of the Torah, Lashon Hara is a very negative thing that we have to deal with. And all year long, we may not be that careful about it. Now we have to come to the Seder night, and the Seder night is, we wanted to make it a Leil Shimurim, a night of protection. We want to be the best Jews that we can be. And therefore, the Seder, as we will describe, is a model to help us learn to speak properly and to not speak Lashon Hara. That's the goal of the Seder, one of the goals of the Seder. A person who is truly a free person, a person who's experiencing chayrus, freedom, will not speak Lashon Hara. And that's what we want to talk about at this Seder. Now think about it. Think about past Seders you may have been to during the course of your life. Okay, think about last year's Seder or 5 years ago Seder. Family gets together, rushes through the Haggadah, if they say it at all. And then what's the main part is the meal. You eat. Now what do people do when they have a meal?
They leave.
Talk.
They talk. And what do they talk about? Right? You don't have to tell me. What do people talk about? They talk about people. They talk about this. They talk about that. And we're not giving a class on Lashon Hara, but most of the things when you speak about other people, they border on things that are not permitted to be spoken about. Remember, if you say negative things about people, even if they're true, that's Lashon Hara. That's Lashon Hara. A person who speaks Lashon Hara.
Positive.
What?
Also the positive is Lashon Hara.
Could be. But I'm just saying, Lashon Hara is a symptom of a person having poor self-esteem. If a person has good self-esteem, he's not going to talk Lashon Hara about other people. Why do you have to talk about the bad of others? What do you get out of it? The answer is, if I say something bad about others, that makes me a better person. So you don't think you're such a good person without that? So you're really not a free person. So if you think about many Seders are fertile territories to speak all kinds of Lashon Hara. So the truth is, we're going to look at the Seder, and the Seder is a model if it's to be a Leil Shimurim. So that our mouths have to be the most perfect of everything. In what we eat, and in what we say. So let's go through the Seder, and I'm going to show you in so many ways that this message keeps coming at you. If you just pay attention, you see that that's the message. We're not going to have time to go through the whole Seder, but we'll go through many highlights, and there's enough things that you can speak over to teach people how important this is. So let's start with Kiddush. So in the Haggadah we say that you are Bachartanu Mikol Ha'amim, you have chosen us from all the people, V'romamtanu Mikol Lashon, and you have raised us above. Now Lashon, in that pasuk means nations, but really the word Lashon means tongues. V'romamtanu Mikol Lashon, you say it in Kiddush, V'romamtanu Mikol Lashon, you have elevated us beyond all tongues. V'kideshanu v'mitzvosav, you made us holy with your commandments. So what's the first message that we are doing? You know, when a person talks Lashon Hara, one of the reasons we speak Lashon Hara is we don't realize how special we are. We don't realize what the power of speech is. It comes so automatically, we don't even think about what's so amazing about the power of speech. It's a tremendous gift. It's something that only a human being has. As you see in source number 4, when it said that Hashem formed man of the dust of the ground, and he breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. God blew a spirit of life, blew a neshama into man. And the Targum over there, the Aramaic explanation says, what does it mean he became a living soul? What does it mean he became a godly person? It says he was able to speak. L'ruach memalala, a spirit of speaking. The ability to speak is the manifestation of the godly soul that you have. All right, you're a divine being. A divine being has the capability of taking one's thoughts, feelings, and emotions and expressing them. The power of speech is therefore the greatest manifestation of who and what you are. So obviously it's meant to do things that emulate the Creator. And therefore, what is it that the human being was speaking? What is the language of the Jewish people? The language of the Jewish people is Lashon HaKodesh, not Hebrew. The holy tongue, it's called Lashon HaKodesh. The Hebrew language is called the Lashon HaKodesh. It's the holy tongue. The holy tongue, as we've said many times before, that the Hebrew alphabet, that's from which God created the world. The Hebrew letters are comparable to the scientific periodic table. And every letter is something that which God created worlds with. We don't understand the mystical background between each and every letter. But God has given human beings the power to speak, but Jews, the power to speak Lashon HaKodesh, to speak the holy tongue. And that every letter carries with it such incredible power. We see in the area of halacha how much power God invested into speech. That all kinds of Jewish law applies through your mouth. Let's give two examples. For example, if I go over to a kosher piece of food and I just do the following. I say, I make a vow that I will not eat that kosher piece of pizza. I make such a vow. And then afterwards I eat that piece of pizza. I am a sinner. Because when I verbalize that I will not eat it, as far as I'm concerned, for me, it is treif. Now what happened to the piece of pizza? Nothing happened to the piece of pizza. It's the same everybody else can eat in the world. But by the fact that I verbalize that I cannot eat it, you created a reality into that piece of pizza. And you cannot eat it. Let's give another example. If a person wants to get married to a man wants to get married to a woman. If, you know, under almost all circumstances, if he doesn't open up his mouth, they ain't gonna get married. The man has to verbalize, Hare at mekudesh es li b'tava zu kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. He must verbalize that. When he verbalizes that together with giving the ring, they are now married. And if he doesn't say those words, they're not married. So you see how important the power of speech creates the bond between a man and a woman, which would not exist if they do not speak. There's so many examples, you know, keeping your word. You lie. What's the big deal? I lie. If you lie, it's a sin. It creates a reality. There's so many realities that are created with one's mouth, which we'll talk about more. But we see the first thing we have to realize is that what's the gift of speech? The gift of speech that God gave us. Speech is one of the most, if God forbid a person suffers a stroke or has aphasia, for a person to learn how to speak is almost impossible. The training necessary to, so many different things are going on, how you have to move your tongue and your palate and this and that, and you have to think what you want to say, and it all happens so automatically. Why? Because it's such an important tool. If you'd have to think about everything you're doing, you'd be crippled. And since it's so important, God made it easy for us. And therefore, and really, speech is, it represents the total human being. Speech is everything. Why? Because thinking, we think about a lot of things. But, you know, you're not really clear about all your thoughts. Are your thoughts real thoughts? Are they not real thoughts? You think you hate somebody, you think you like somebody, but till you actually articulate it and say it, speech is collecting everything that's going on inside of you and bringing it out and sharing it with other people. That makes it real. So the power of speech is incredibly powerful. That let's take a look at Shabbos. Shabbos, we know, will always come when the sun sets, if you like it or not. But you have the power by an hour before Shabbos, if you just say these words, Hare ani mekabel olai tosefes Shabbos, I accept upon myself to add on to the Shabbos and start the Shabbos now. That's all you said. And then you go and strike a match and there'd be two witnesses who would warn you not to when you do it. You get killed for it because you transgressed the Shabbos. It's an hour before Shabbos, but you already said it's Shabbos. The idea to sanctify time is in the power of your lips. That's why we make Kiddush. We make Kiddush on Friday night to say that the day is a holy day. Now it'll be holy with or without you. But when you make the Kiddush, now you have now taken on that Kiddush. And that's why we make Kiddush before every meal. So when we start off the night, we are saying that I am now using the holiest tool that I have in my repertoire, the tool of speech. And we're describing that that speech that God gave us has elevated us from the rest of the world. It means a Jew doesn't talk like everybody else in the rest of the world. Because we realize the gift of speech, especially in the Lashon HaKodesh gift that we have, and it's a powerful gift. The more that a person understands what kind of power he has, the more he'll be careful to use that gift the way it was meant to be used. And that's Kaddish. Okay, we move on to the next step. Urchatz. Urchatz is where I should have told everybody to bring a Haggadah. But anyway, Urchatz, we wash our hands. Now this washing of our hands is of quite unusual mitzvah. Why are we washing our hands? We're not going to eat bread. So why are we washing, it's not in the notes. Why are we washing our hands? We're washing our hands because in the days of the Talmud, when people were very particular about eating food in the holiest state, even though everybody agrees we wash our hands before we eat bread, there's a whole discussion if you wash your hands, if you're eating a fruit or vegetable that's dipped in liquid. A vegetable or fruit that's dipped in liquid, do you need to wash your hands before that? And the generally accepted opinion was people weren't that particular about it. Well, they were lenient. And that's the halacha even till today. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash now. Certainly there's room to be lenient. So nowadays, we do not generally wash our hands before we eat something that is dipped. But on Pesach, we want to show how meticulous we are, that even though a whole year long we're not so careful about mitzvahs, we want to show that we're very careful on this night. So now that we finished the Urchatz saying we want to be extra careful, so even though a whole year long I'm not particular about it, but on this one night, I want to show Hashem that I can be the best Jew that I can be. That's in any aspect of halacha. So certainly after you've made Kiddush and you've said that I have such a glorious tongue So maybe your Yates will say, what do you care? All year long you talk Lashon Hara. What's tonight going to make any difference? You got all your friends, neighbors. You want to mess the whole night up for everybody? I'm just going to have a lousy time if we don't talk Lashon Hara. So say, you know what? But we're washing our hands before we're dipping the vegetable. We don't do that all year long either. So can't we one night of the year do things the way they're supposed to be done? According to all opinions. That's the message of Ur Chatz. That, you know, it's not a contradiction for you to be a better Jew on this night than you are the rest of the year. And that's what Ur Chatz is telling each and every one of us. Also, we'll see shortly, there's another issue that we'll only be able to understand later, because there is a question. The normal order, Kadesh Ur Chatz, on a simple terms means, Kadesh means you become holy, Ur Chatz, and you wash yourself. Usually it's the reverse. Usually, first you wash yourself, you go into the mikveh, then you become holy. So really it should have been Rachatz Kadesh. Why are we reversing that? We'll see a little bit later an answer to that as well. Okay, now we move on to Karpas. Karpas is where we take the vegetable and we dip it in liquid and we make the bracha after we washed our hands. Now here's an incredible idea by the Sefer HaLekach VaLibuv. So it's a beautiful idea over here. He brings it from one of the great Hasidic masters. He says, why is it that we dip in the vegetable into the water? He says, now you gotta think about it. He says, by what right do we as human beings have to eat meat? What right do we have? Let's take the position for a moment of the PETA animal advocates. What right do you have to eat another animal? It's a living being. So what right do you have to eat another living being? You're one living being, you're another living being. So the answer is, the only answer we can give for that is that we know that there are four levels of elements of creation. Four general elements. One is called domain, inanimate objects. One is called tzomeach, plant. Next is called chai, animal. And the last is called midaber, a speaker. And the general rule of thumb is that a higher level being is entitled to consume a lower level being because it will elevate that lower level being into the higher level being's existence. That is a general rule of thumb. The only reason that we are entitled to eat an animal is that because that animal on its own doesn't do very much to make the world a better place. Everything in this world has to have a purpose. An animal sitting around, a cow's eating in the field, what's he doing to contribute to civilization? So a cow, you could say, we can get milk. But what about a bull? What about a steer? What do they do to contribute to the world? So one of their contributions is to provide nutritious protein and food for human beings. Human being needs to have protein. Human being, if he eats food and he's healthy, he will now be able to serve God in the best way possible. This animal now has a purpose. Everything in this world has to have a purpose. And therefore a human being is entitled to eat anything in this world, provided he eats it in the way that he's meant to eat things. Provided the human being lives like a human being. So says the Zohar HaKadosh. In other words, so the fact that we're allowed to eat meat is because we are privileged characters. We're a midaber. I'm a speaker. I'm an intelligent person who has a very lofty goal in life. However, as we've already said, that the Zohar says that when we were in Egypt, our speech was in exile too. In other words, we didn't really have that lofty level of a midaber. In other words, the fact that there's a fourth element of a human being called a midaber, it means that it's not just that you're an animal who speaks. We have to understand these four levels. A plant is not a rock that grows. It's not an inanimate object plus the fact it can grow. And a cow is not a plant plus the fact that it's alive. And a human being is not a cow who talks. It's a qualitative difference. In other words, a plant is qualitatively different than an inanimate object, than a rock. It's not a rock plus a few attributes. It's totally different. An animal is totally different than a plant. A human being is totally different than an animal. And especially a Jew, which you want to get into those details. And therefore, if you don't live up to the category that you are in, you're not deserving to be any higher than the category that you're better than. And therefore, and this is what it says, that people who are not really, the Gemara in Pesachim really says that amaratzim, ignorant people, really shouldn't eat so much meat. Not a good idea. In other words, our right to eat meat is if we are truly a genuine midaber, a genuine speaker who speaks what he's meant to speak. But if our speech is in exile, our speech is not really, we're not in control of our speech. When we use our mouths in ways that we're not supposed to do things, then we lose our right to eat meat. We have no right. The people from Pita are correct. Why should you be able to eat this animal? You're no different than the animal. Their mistake is, because they think people aren't different than animals. They're making a big mistake. People are different than animals. The fact that I can speak means I'm an intelligent being who has a great godly power that puts me in the divine image of God. And if I can take my divine image and take something lower in this world and elevate it in the service of God, I'm doing the cow a big service. If I eat a cow, and after I eat the cow, I have the strength to learn Torah and do mitzvahs, then I did the cow a big favor. But if I go and I'm, you know, eating ribs and wings and all this stuff, why? So I can yell my heart out at the Super Bowl. Then what right do you have to eat that animal? You're no different than that animal. And that's what the Zohar says. And therefore, after man, you know, sinned, you know, really the human being was only entitled to eat vegetables. See, at least a human being who doesn't use his speech properly, at least he's still the level of an animal. If you level an animal is allowed to eat vegetables, and an animal is allowed to drink water. Water is an inanimate object, and vegetables are plant life. So just like a cow can drink some water and eat some grass, so too can the human being who doesn't live like a human being, doesn't use his power of speech the way it should be used, and he's just like an animal that's blubbering with its mouth, then the human being has no right to eat more than a cow. So we come to the Seder night, acknowledging that a whole year long our mouths have been in exile, and we haven't been using our mouths properly, and we come to this meal at this point in time, and we're ready to start eating, and we're saying, hold on there, you're not going to eat what you want to eat. There are no rib steaks for you at this point of the game. And all you can eat is what? Karpas, which is a little vegetable dipped in salt water. You're only allowed the world of the inanimate objects and the plants, and you're not allowed to eat the animals. Because your mouth is still in exile. Remember, the whole theme of the Seder night is every Jew has to feel that he has gone out of Egypt this night. You have to really feel you've gone out of Egypt. This is one of the hardest mitzvahs of the Torah to fulfill, is the Seder night. To really feel that you have had a redemption. That means you have to understand, coming in you weren't redeemed, and coming out you will be redeemed. And if in Egypt our mouths were in exile, our mouths were not redeemed, we have to work on ourselves that through the Seder we are redeeming our speech, we are redeeming our mouth. And therefore the way the Seder was instituted is that you starting the Seder recognizing that your mouth is in exile. And therefore you're not allowed to eat any meat now. And all you can have is some wine, wine which comes from the grapes. And all you can have is a little potato or a piece of celery with a little bit of salt water, v'zehu. Until you've learned to fix up your mouth, you're not given the privileges of a medaber. We hope that if you've done what's coming up in the next hour and a half of the Seder, you'll be entitled to come to Shulchan Aruch, which is always the question, why is that one of the parts of the Seder? Of course everybody eats. I understand Kaddish, making Kiddush, that's a distinctive holy thing. Urchatz, you're washing your hand. That's a holy thing. Karpas, you normally don't have a little piece of celery with sour. That's a part of the Seder, a part of the Seder. But to call a part of the Seder Shulchan Aruch, to eat the meal, I mean, what's so holy about eating a meal? The answer is, you're right, it won't be if you don't do what you're supposed to do until this point in time. Hopefully, if when we go through the Magid, which we will explain now, you will be rewarded to be able to have a meal. Because what was the main course on the Seder night when we had a temple? It was the Korban Pesach. It was eating the Paschal lamb. There was an animal that gave his life up for your service of God. You're eating this animal because God commanded us to eat this animal. But you know what? You have to be a person who deserves to be elevated over that animal. And that only happens if you're going to guard your tongue. So maybe a whole year long, maybe we should not, we really maybe not entitled to eat animal meat from a spiritual perspective. We're not saying halachically you can't because it's kosher meat. But in terms of who you are, if you're not living as a human being and you get totally enamored with the physical pleasures of meat in this world, it will not bode well for you on a spiritual basis. And really, from a spiritual point of view, you should not be able to eat it. But if you've done what Hashem wants you to do, then you'll come the main course of the meal, will be the meat, you'll be able to eat it, because that will now reflect on your elevated status that you've accomplished through the Seder. Isn't that beautiful, beautiful idea? So that's the karpas. And now look at the word karpas in source number 5. Karpas, karpas, how do you spell karpas? Chaf, resh, pei, samach. Chaf, resh, pei, samach. That is the letters. Chaf, resh, pei, samach. The first letters say the following words. Klal, rishon. See, there's a chaf and a resh. The first rule, pesagur, keep your mouth shut. Karpas, chaf resh pesamach, klal rishon, chaf resh, klal rishon, the first rule, pesagur, keep your mouth shut. That's the first rule. You want to talk lashon hara? Karpas, keep your mouth shut. You want to say something about somebody else? Keep your mouth shut. Don't talk about those things. That's karpas. However, that's not the whole story, as we'll see shortly, but that's kind of, this is beautiful, you see, you go with this theme, you're gonna teach your friends, we're gonna work tonight to fix our mouths up. That's what Hashem gave you this glorious night for. And people are gonna say, oh, it's gonna be so no fun. We'll see shortly. We'll see. This is a challenge. It's a challenge of the Seder night. There's something that's gonna be a whole year long. At least for one night, for 2-3 hours, we can't do this. So Chazar guiding you how to do it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the power of speech. Isn't it a great gift that God gave us, this power of speech? How holy we can be with this speech? And you know what? A whole year long I'm not so careful about Urchatz. We're more particular. At least tonight we'll be more particular. And then the Karpas, which is saying, you know what? We really right now don't even deserve to have any meat at this meal. Right now we're not any better. Of the first rule, klal rishon pesagur. First rule, keep your mouth shut. Let's not talk about anything else. Now move on to the next. Oh yes, there's still another thing about karpas. Another thing about karpas is, what does karpas remind us of? We're dipping. We're dipping. What is the most famous dipping in Jewish history? The first dipping in Jewish history. First dipping in the Torah was what?
The liquid.
The first dipping, where something was dipped into a liquid. First time mentioned in the Torah. Book of Genesis, Parshas Vayeshev. You know it, you all know it.
Yosef and Avraham.
Yosef and the brothers. The brothers took his coat and dipped it in blood. That's the first time something was dipped.
We can't remember.
We have to remember that. Why was that dipped in blood? What was the chain of events? What was the primary reason why his coat was dipped in blood? Because of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara that Yosef said about the brothers, Machlokes between the two brothers. Everyone's saying bad things about the other. Evil speech doesn't end at evil speech. Evil speech ends when you sell your brother into slavery, you cover it up by dipping his coat into blood. And isn't that really how the whole story of the Jews going to Egypt came into being? The whole story, we don't want to say it so overtly. It's a negative thing to say about the Jews. We don't want to mention it overtly at the Seder. But really, it deserves some mention, doesn't it? To say, listen, how did we get into this mess in the first place? Because we loved each other so much? Because we used our mouths so properly? It's because we used our mouths not properly. And because we used our mouths not properly, the critical point was dipping the coat into blood. And that was using our mouths. And when the brothers spoke to Yaakov, were they speaking honestly to their father? Did they use their mouth the way they should have used and say, you know, Dad, we have problems with Yosef. Let's talk about it. Instead, they just get angry. And then they lied to him. They said, we found this coat. You liars, you didn't find the coat. They're lying right to their father after they dipped the coat. So this is the real reason why we had problems. So now we just hint to it. Before we even start the Seder, that we want to make a tikkun, we want to make a correction for the first dipping of history. We're going to dip now. Dip now what? Just a vegetable in water to say, we right now are like behemoths. We don't deserve any better. Hopefully by the end of the night, we're going to be better people. So that's another beautiful symbolism of the karpas. And therefore, klal rishon pesagur. First rule, keep your mouth shut. If you don't have anything good to say, keep your mouth shut. But that's not going to be the end. But you got to realize how important it is to not speak lashon hara. Okay, so that's kadesh, urchatz, karpas. It's easy to remember. You can remember this. Easy. Kadesh, how holy is the power of speech. Urchatz, let's try to be better than we are a whole year long. Karpas, we don't deserve to eat more right now. We acknowledge our low level right now because our mouths, our power of speech isn't goals. We're not, you know, when you talk lashon hara, because there's always like this pressure. You're in a room, you're at a simcha, right? You're a simcha. If someone's talking lashon hara, do you have the courage to tell the person, you're not allowed to talk that way? Do you have the courage to tell that to people? Who am I to tell them what to say? I'm so uncomfortable saying this. And then what is that? No, well, that you start getting involved. You don't even have control over your own self. You start talking lashon hara. You just start talking before you realize how much lashon hara you said. Your mouth's in exile. We come to the Seder humbly saying to Hashem, our mouths are in exile. We're not entitled for any more, but we're hoping we'll be cured by the end of this night. That's what we're trying to accomplish. So now we move to the next part. Next part of the Seder is karpas. What comes after karpas? Yachatz. We break the matzah into two pieces. And the Kabbalists explain, what does that mean to break it into two pieces? There's many ways we're going to understand this. Now, obviously, the simple meaning is we save half of the matzah for now and half for later. That's the simple meaning. But there's much, much deeper meaning. And the rabbis tell us that the matzah is symbolic of the Jewish person. And a Jewish person, we break the matzah in two. Break the matzah in two. What do? The smaller piece we put on the Seder plate, the bigger piece we hide away for later, is symbolic of the human being. The human being is made up of two parts. It's made up of two parts. The part that you can see and the part that's hidden. The part that you can see is the body, the animal part of the person. The part that you can't see is the soul. And you can't see it. It's hard to know that it's there. So on the Seder night, we are understanding. We're going to talk about the exodus of Egypt. We're going to talk about how Paro enslaved us. We're going to talk about all the suffering we had. So when we take this matzah that is really reflective of the Jewish soul, we break it in half. And we take the smaller part. We take the body. And we put the body here. And we say, yes, we could talk about slavery and how we were slaves, avodim hayinu, but there's only one part that really power could ever make us slaves. That's our bodies. Nobody can make more than your body into a slave, but your soul, the deepest part of your soul, can never be enslaved. And that bigger part of the matzo we put in a little, put it away. We hide it. And we're going to talk all day long about how the Jews were slaves and the Jews were this and we first worshipped ourselves. That's just our bodies. But the real, real Jew, that's put away at the side. It's not involved in the story yet. When do we bring that? When do we bring the Afikoman back? The Afikoman after the Haggadah is over. After we are redeemed. And when we talk about the second part of the Seder, it's about Mashiach. When Mashiach comes, then we're come to an understanding that we have a soul. The greater part of myself, you know, in the day-to-day life, I don't really acknowledge I have a greater part to myself. And that's that greater part that gives you the ability to speak properly, as we said before. So we break it to say, right now, all we have is this half, the body part. The part that is not endowed with the godly gift of speech and the way it was meant to be done. The godly part is put away right now. But hopefully when we finish this Seder, we'll bring that godly part back. When? When we can get our mouths back in line to what our soul's all about. So that's what the breaking of the two halves are symbolizing. And we'll see even more than that. When you're breaking something in half, there's no unity. And certainly, one of the terrible, devastating effects of Lashon Hara is it breaks the unity of the Jewish person. Okay. So at this point in the game, we realize what we have to do. But there's another important message. And this is what's, when you, the message right now, people are going to get very upset. So what do you mean? We're going to have a whole Seder where I have to keep my mouth shut. Klal Rishon Pesagur. Is that the whole story? Is this what it means to be a Jew? So let's take a little bit of a digression for a moment and see what we're really trying to accomplish over here. And with this, we will move now to Parshas Vayikra, the sixth source, and we'll talk a little bit about the purification of a Metzora. A Metzora is a person who is punished because he speaks Lashon Hara, he is a Metzora. But then there's a process of purification. So let's look at that process of purification. And it says like this, the Kohen takes two birds. The guy brings the Kohen, the Metzora brings the Kohen two birds. All right? Now birds, they chirp. Right? They talk a lot. And they really don't say much.
You don't right? know.
It's called pitpute. It's like they're chirping. They're making a lot of noise. You know, a person who speaks Lashon Hara is like a bird. He chirps. He just wants to be heard. He has nothing to say. So we take two birds. What do we do? Let's take a look in source number 6. It says, and the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen utensil over running water. One bird is shechted. We kill him. And then the second bird, and shall let the living bird loose in the open field. We take the second bird and we send it away after we do some things with it. We send it away, go free. Now the question is, what did you take the bird for? I took the first bird to shecht him. Okay, he's an offering. The second bird, okay, you know, we put a little water on him, this and that, but then we just send the bird away. So what do we take him for? So here you're going to see an incredible answer. And more than that, the whole process is involved with a Kohen. The Kohen is involved in the process. Another question is, why do we have to have a Kohen? Why can't we just take any big rabbi to be involved in the process? So the answer to this is a beautiful answer. It says in Pirkei Avos, in source number 7, Akavi, the son of Mahalal, would say, reflect upon three things and you will not come to the hands of transgression. If you think of these three things, you won't even come into the grips of sin. You won't even come to hand-to-hand combat with the Yetzer Hara. You'll be so far away from sinning if you would think about these three things. You'll never sin. You won't even want to sin. Seven. Number one is know where you came from. And what does that mean? You came from a putrid drop. You're not such a big guy. You're just a piece of seminal drop. So don't be such a big Balgaiva. Number two, think about where you're going. You know where you're going? You're going to be lunch for the worms, buddy. That's what you're going to be. Everybody, the worms are just waiting for us. After 120 years, it's a big meal. But the third one is, and know before whom you are destined to give a din v'cheshbon. a judgment and accounting. The Almighty. Now that alone is a beautiful statement. If you really think about it, to know what are you? You know, you're a putrid drop. Nothing to be arrogant about. You're going to be lunch for the worms, and you're going to answer to God. The Vilna Gaon asks a brilliant question. Normally, when you make a judgment, when you're a judge, do you first make a judgment and then a calculation, or do you make a calculation and then a judgment? You bring a court case to you. What do you do first? Do you calculate? Or do you judge? Which one do you do first?
Calculate.
You gotta calculate. I have to make a cheshbon. Let me hear what you have to say. Let me hear what you say. Okay, you said you had reasons for this. Okay, let me hear the cheshbon. Let me hear the calculation. Well, you know, my car ran into him, but after all, my brakes failed and the other guy didn't yield and was supposed to yield. We have to calculate. Then when we're finished calculating, we make the judgment. That's the normal way things are done. When God will judge us after 120 years. Okay, let's hear the calculation. So go ahead and defend yourself. Say what you have to say. Let's calculate. I'll calculate. Okay. Okay, 5 million mitzvahs. Good mitzvahs. Not such good mitzvahs. 7 million averas. Not such good. We're making the calculations, and now we make the judgment. But it says the opposite. Din v'cheshbon. Judgment and calculation. And the Vilna Gaon says such an incredible answer. He says like this, din, the judgment is for the sin that you did. God judges you if you're guilty or not on a sin. You did a certain action, God says, okay, can you explain to me why you did this? Guilty is charged. Whatever it is. Let's say you took $1,000 and you did a big avera with this $1,000. Okay, this guy says, what do you say about that? Guilty. That's the did. But you think it's over? It's not over. We've only begun. Now comes cheshbon. What's cheshbon? Cheshbon is calculation. What do you mean? Let's say, for example, I did an avera where I stole from someone. It took me from beginning to end an hour and a half to accomplish the job. First, I figured out how am I going to steal from the guy. I watched the house. When is the house empty? Then I had to go in and look around. It took me an hour and a half to do an avera. So God judges you. You did an avera. But now it's a cheshbon. What's a cheshbon? If you weren't doing this avera for that hour and a half, how much mitzvah could you have done in that hour and a half? An hour and a half, you could have done chesed. You could have driven meals on wheels for an hour and a half. And you know what kind of mitzvah you could have done with that hour and a half? We're not talking you were sick. We're not talking you were sleeping. We're not talking you had to work to make parnasa. We're talking you had an hour and a half of time that you had enough time to go in someone's house and to steal. So I'm going to punish you for the stealing. But now I'm going to make a cheshbon that you could have also done chesed for an hour and a half.
How much you could have
done. And what you could have done. And you wasted that time. I gave you that time to do mitzvahs. And not only you did not bear, but you didn't do the mitzvah. The worst, now here's the interesting thing. What's the worst thing about doing a sin isn't so much the sin. Mm-hmm. It's you blew the opportunity to do a mitzvah at the time that you did the sin. And that's the cheshbon. That's the cheshbon. So don't think, you know, when you do an avera, okay, he'll punish me for this when it's worth it. You know, you got to remember, it's going to be a double-edged. Then the guy said, but there was an hour and a half, it gave you life. Do you know how insulting that is to me? That an hour and a half of life that you could have done something good, you did something bad. And that's the cheshbon. Okay. So now, this explains another beautiful idea. Where it says in source number 8, there's two different types of tshuva. We know.
Are we going to answer the question?
We're going to answer everything. Hang on. We're going to answer everything. I know. Well, just give me time. So there's two kinds of tshuva. There's a tshuva out of fear and a tshuva out of love. Tshuva out of fear, you're afraid Hashem's going to punish you. You do tshuva. Tshuva out of love, it's a whole different category. I don't want to get into the details. That's not important right now. I just want to bring out one point. There are rules. When you do tshuva out of fear, what happens to your averos? Let's say I did an intentional sin. I intentionally wanted to steal from the guy. Right? So tshuva out of fear means it turns the intentional to unintentional. After you've done tshuva, after you feel sore and you feel bad and I shouldn't have done it and I regret it and I will never do it again, blah, 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 blah. But you still, you're motivated out of fear more than anything else. So God treats it like an unintentional sin. But if you do tshuva out of love, it's not so much you care about the punishment, but you really feel bad how you've hurt the relationship and you really love Hashem and this wasn't the way to nurture a relationship. Then it says it turns your averos into mitzvos. How do you understand that? Now, there's lots of explanations, but how could it be positive? So we're just going to say one idea, but not the whole explanation. But now we're going to say, that's the difference. When you do tshuva out of fear, what do you accomplish? That the din is wiped away. You did something bad, that's gone. It's like unintentional. Unintentional, you don't get punished. But even when I do an unintentional sin, I was wasting my time. Tshuva out of fear doesn't correct the cheshbon. So it's like I didn't mean to steal. Okay, when a person doesn't mean to do it, you don't get punished. But so I spent an hour and a half not meaning to steal. But you still wasted an hour and a half. There's still a cheshbon. But when you do tshuva out of love, it takes the cheshbon and reverses that too. How that works, I don't want to get into that right now. I just want to explain why there's a difference between the two.
It does make sense.
So if you understand the way the Gro explained, this is the explanation of the Vilna Gaon. The Cheshbon means that the worst part of an Aver is what you didn't do during that time. If you do tshuva out of love, Hashem makes it like you did good things during that hour and a half. How that works, I need another explanation from them, but I just wanted to get that idea across. So now let's bring this back to the Metzor over here. This is the most beautiful part now. So now, a guy has tzaras. Why? He's a leper because he speaks Lashon Hara. So there's two aspects to speaking Lashon Hara. He spent 10 minutes speaking Lashon Hara about somebody. That's the din. That's the law. That's bad. But now there's the cheshbo. What, if you weren't talking Lashon Hara about this guy for 10 minutes, what could you have been doing with those 10 minutes? You could have been using your mouth for more beautiful things. So there's a din and a cheshbon. The din is you're a bad guy, you're getting punished for speaking Lashon Hara. The cheshbon is you're a bad guy, you wasted the time and didn't do something positive. We need to do tshuva on both. And that's what the Zohar says, that at the end of the day we'll be accountable for both of these things. We'll be accountable for things that we were not supposed to say, and we'll be accountable for things that we were supposed to say that we didn't say. In those 10 minutes, I was supposed to be saying good things, and I didn't say the good things, so it's a double-edged sword. You know, it's interesting, people think about the Chavetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan. He was the author, he was the king of the rules of Lashon Hara. And most people probably think he lived a very secluded life, he never opened his mouth. And it's the furthest thing from the truth, the Chavetz Chaim spoke non-stop. Non-stop. You know, one of my mechutanim, Rabbi Irons, he's a big tzaddik, big schus that I've been married into his family. Whenever he always talks.
It's true.
He always talks, but he only says good things. He only says good things. It's not enough to be quiet. Certainly if you don't know what to say, when in doubt, leave it out. Klal Rishon Pesagur. If you don't know what to say, better don't say anything. At least you're getting out of the din. But there is a cheshbon. In other words, the whole point of this Seder, and here's the critical point. Let's come back to the birds first. I'm jumping. So therefore we take two birds. One bird we slaughter. That's for the din. The din is you weren't supposed to speak Lashon Hara. That's a terrible thing. We're going to kill this bird as if to say what's happening to that bird should be happening to you. But since you're doing tshuva, we'll give it on to the bird. To know how bad what you did is, that's the din right there on that bird. That's tshuva for what you shouldn't have said, that you said that you shouldn't have said it. But we don't expect you to keep your mouth shut for the rest of your life because there's a cheshbon. Why weren't you saying good things during this time? So now we take the other bird, and instead of killing the bird, we bedavka take it, and we could have killed it. It's in our hands. I could kill it. I send it free to say, that bird should speak. We want you to leave here speaking, not just not speaking. You have to, on the one hand, know what you shouldn't say, But you weren't brought into this world to not say things. You were brought in this world to say things. And we want you to chirp away, to talk like a bird your whole life, but to say the things that you were meant to say during this time in life. And there's so many things that you could say in life. You say, well, if I can't talk Lashon Hara, what can I say already? There's nothing to say. So let me give you a few examples of what you could say. Number one, Talmud Torah Kineged Kulam. The study of Torah is equal to everything else. If you have nothing to say, open up a Chumash and learn Chumash and say the words of the Chumash. That's the biggest mitzvah you can do. And when you're at a wedding, you go to your friend, if you love your friend, and say, I'd like to tell you a profound idea I saw in the Parsha this week. And talk for 10 minutes. Every letter that you're saying is a mitzvah. Every letter he's hearing is a mitzvah. Talmud Torah. If you learn Torah, you now have an hour to speak to somebody with what I'm giving you. You have not what to say. You can't say this over to a few people. Number one. Number two, what about prayer? Prayer is only considered prayer if it's verbalized. You have to use your mouth to pray to Hashem, not just during three times a day with the official prayers. You're going to the store, you say, Hashem, please help me that I find the food properly. I don't get and say Lashon Hara to people. You talk to Hashem through the day. That's what you're supposed to be saying. How about the Pasuk David HaMelech says in Halel, Hamanti Kiadaber. Hamanti kiadaber, which a simple meaning is, you know, I believed and I spoke, but the rabbis say, Hamanti, how do I come to emuna? Kiadaber, by my speaking about emuna. You only can believe in Hashem if you talk to Hashem. That's how emuna is cultivated. It comes through speech. You talk about the day. See how the hand of Hashem was in your day. You come home, you say to your spouse, I want to show you how Hashem was involved in my day. That's good kind of talk with your mouth. And how about encouraging people? Calling up somebody who's sad and despondent and giving them words of encouragement. Is there a lack of things to say that are beautiful things to be said? You could speak all day long. And you won't run out of things to say. Well, but if you're an ignoramus, well, you got a problem. You don't know any Torah. How are you going to speak anything? If you're a self-centered person who doesn't care about others, who's going to waste their time encouraging people? If you don't believe you have a relationship with God, you ain't going to pray. If you don't want to believe in God, you're not going to try to strengthen that. So when we come to the next world, now you so think about three things, and you'll never, ever do an Aveira. If you know where you came from, you're just a shtick seminal drop. You shtick garnished. You're going to be lunch for the worms. You shtick garnished. But think about this. At the end of the day, there's going to be a din and a cheshbon. Not just Hashem's going to get you for the Aveira. He's going to get you for the time you wasted when you were doing that Aveira. If you really think about that, do you really want to do an Aveira? You get hit from so many sides, it isn't worth it. And that's the idea of the bird. Beautiful, beautiful idea over here. So now what does this all have to do with the Seder you're going to ask? So now we broke this matzah. Now there's one more shot in breaking the matzah. You broke the matzah. When you break the matzah, it's like we have half over here and there's half over there. Which means to say, we really, when we told you, when we broke by the karpas, we said, Klal Rishon Pes Sagur, first was keep your mouth shut, but then we break the matzah, but that's only half the story. That's only half the story. Half the story is Klal Rishon Pes Sagur, keep your mouth shut. But then there's the second half of the story. Second half of the story is, yeah, the first bird we shecht, but the second bird we let go free, go speak all you want. And that's telling us, you know what's coming up next? The Magid. Now we're going to start talking. But we're going to teach you how to talk. The whole purpose of Magid. Magid means talk. We want you to talk. You're the bird. You're free. But talk what you way you're supposed to talk. I don't know what to talk about. Good, we're going to give you a lesson how to talk. And the entire Magid is a lesson of how to talk. Right? What does it say in the Haggadah? Source number 10. I'm jumping. But look in the bold line. The end of source 10. Kol amar belasaper biyetzias Mitzrayim hareze mishubach. The more that person speaks about the Haggadah, the more he is praiseworthy. What does that mean? It means that the more you're using your mouth in the way it was meant to be used, that's a praiseworthy person. Person says, oh, you scared me to death with this Lashon Hara business. Ooh, it's so terrible. I'm keeping my mouth closed for the rest of my life. That's not Mishubach. That's not Mishubach. It's not praiseworthy. Bad? We're not going to say it's bad, because you're not talking, but praiseworthy is certainly not praiseworthy. As the Chavetz Chaim gives the most amazing analogy, Can you imagine? Think about this now. Think about this. And this really is all part of, in the Haggadah, when it says in source number 11, we say, Mitchila ov de avodah zara. In the beginning, our forefathers were idol worshippers. Va'achshav kervenu hamakom lavodah so. And now Hashem brought us close to His service. So over there, the Chavetz Chaim explains, but this idea is throughout what we're talking about. The following analogy. A poor man comes to a rich man, asks for a loan. He says, listen, Mr. Rich, I need some money. I need $1,000. The rich man says, okay, I'll lend you the $1,000, but you be very careful. Don't lose this money. And at the end of the year, I want this money back. I want it back. Don't just think it's yours. At the end of the year, I want the money back. Fine. A year later, the poor man comes to the rich man. Mr. Rich, you're going to be very happy with me. Here it is. Here's the $1,000 you gave me. I was so careful to not lose this money. You know what I do? Did as soon as you gave me the money, I put the money and put it in my safety deposit box. And I kept it there for a year. And I watched it. Nobody would steal that money. Because you told me to give you back the money and be careful. So here's the exact $1,000. It was exactly, $50, $20 bills. Exactly the same bills you gave me, I gave to you. Aren't you happy with me? The rich man looks like, you out of your mind? Did I give you the money just to store it away? I gave you the money that you're going to invest it. You're going to, buy $1,000 worth of merchandise at a low price and then sell it at a high price. And then we make the profit. I meant when you make the profit, don't blow the profit on booze and stuff like that. Keep the profit, reinvest the profit. So at the end of the year, you made maybe, $3,000 of profit. You gave me the $1,000. That's what I meant. I didn't mean for you to take the gift I gave you and just not use it. So what do you think Hashem's going to ask each and every one of us after 120 years? He says, I gave you a brilliant mind. I gave you a brilliant mouth. I gave you all the tools. I gave you all the apple. Why did I give you this? Why did I give you money? Why did I give you everything? I gave you so you would invest. You would use it properly. I didn't give you such a mouth to keep your mouth shut and keep it locked in a safety deposit box not to speak. I gave you a mouth to learn Torah, to do mitzvahs, to make people feel good. I lent it to you so you'd use it. And that's what we say in the beginning, where our fathers were idol worshippers, and now Hashem brought us to His service. Hashem said, I gave you freedom. What did I give you freedom for? To keep your mouth shut? I gave you freedom to do things with what the gifts I gave you. And the biggest gift I gave you was the power of speech. And I want you to talk all day long, like the bird that I freed. But I want you to talk only things that I allow you to speak about. And that's the whole message of Magid. The most important mitzvah of this night is to tell over the Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's Hashem is saying, I'm giving you a workshop on how to speak. And this will be all the steps to learn how to speak from beginning to end. Now we come to Magid, which is the most important part. We break the matzah, because after Karpas, you only have half the story. Pesach Klal Rishon, Pesach Gur is good for starters, but I don't want it to end this way. You only have half the story. The bigger half is still waiting to tell the story. So let's begin. We're still not yet officially in the Magid, as we still have to learn a few more strategies. And we now come to source number 9. What's the very first words we say? We haven't yet spoken yet, have we? We haven't said anything, but we hopefully have learned a lot. Just by simply making kiddush, eating a vegetable, and cracking a matzah in half. See how much you've learned? Okay, now you're going to open your mouth. This is the first time, not yet up to the midst of Magid yet, but you're going to open your mouth for the first time with this new understanding. So what's the first thing that should come out of your mouth? I'm hungry, let's have supper. The first thing comes out of your mouth is Halach Ma'anya, source number 9. This is the bread of affliction that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. The first thing we're saying is we're inviting people to our table. The first thing I should use my mouth is to think about other people. First rule. First rule about opening your mouth. Before you open your mouth, are you a person who empathizes with other people? Do you feel other people's pain? If you would feel about other people, then how would you, if you felt other people's pain, then you'd want to use your mouth to make them feel better, wouldn't you? If you don't think about people's pain, then when you open your mouth, you don't care if you hurt their feelings or not. Right? If we really felt another person's presence in our life, and another person is capable of suffering, and we're capable of feeling their suffering, don't you think I would empathize and I'd verbalize the empathy for that person? Wouldn't I use my mouth in that way? So after we say this is the bread of affliction, right? Whoever is hungry, let him come and eat. Whoever is in need, let him come and conduct the Seder of Passover. We're inviting people to the Seder. Now, well, I know it's a little bit late to invite people, but you were a numbskull behemoth until now, so what could I do about it? But at least now when you're going to start your Seder, I know what I should have done. Okay. What I should have done. The first thing I should have been busy a whole week using my mouth to find out who needs a Seder. To invite them, but not just to invite them. But to say it in a nice way. Not just stam, but now look at the next line, which is a very questionable line. Okay, let's finish in source number 9. This year we are here, next year in the land of Israel. This year we are slaves, next year we are people. What does that have to do with anything? What are we talking about this? What's this? The answer is, we're teaching you how to speak with empathy. What does that mean? Okay, you're going to invite a poor man to your Seder table. Okay. You invite him to the Seder table. Now, don't you think the guy feels rotten that he has to be at your Seder table? I mean, he's happy you invited him. But don't you think, I had to come on to this guy? You know, even though he's going to get a good meal, otherwise he'd be starving, and he's appreciative that he's got a good meal, but he still feels bad, you know, this is going to be my whole life. My whole life is this way. And next year I'll have to be in his house and get a meal. I always need a handout from people. So that's why we say words. Not only do we use our words to invite him, and realize that I care about you. But when he's here, I gotta say the words when he's here. I gotta use my mouth in a way to make him feel good right here and right now. So what do I say? I'm saying, this year we are here. Yeah, you're right. This year it's not so great for all the Jewish people. Next year we'll be in Israel. This year we are slaves. Next year we'll be free people. You're broke now. You're down and out now. Don't worry. Mashiach's gonna come by next year. This will be the last Seder you'll have to eat at somebody else's house. You're making him feel better. You're saying, this is not going to be a permanent situation. I know now you're poor, you didn't have, and I, you know, and without saying it, I could sense how uncomfortable you are at the table. But you know what? I'm also not a free man. I'm also not where I'm supposed to be. We're all not where we're supposed to be, all on a different level. Hopefully, Amir Tzashem will be on a better place next year. We'll all be in a better place next year. Now, you see, now you know how to start to talk after something? You see, and the truth is that there's many poor people at your table. There's many poor people there's very many spiritually poor people at your table. They're coming to the table with no mitzvahs. That's the worst poverty of all. And the Chavetz Chaim says, what's the worst poverty of all poverties? What's the worst poverty of all poverties? Is the poverty of ignorance.
Burut?
Ignorance, burut. You don't know Torah. That's the biggest poverty. And the Chavetz Chaim, you have to have the biggest rachmanis. And a person doesn't know anything. So the truth of the matter is, we're not just remembering the people we forgot to invite. It's really the people that we're inviting right now. Whoever's hungry, if you're hungry to learn a little bit of spirituality, come and eat. If you're in need, let's come and do the Seder. Let's make this a worthwhile Seder. Let's make this Seder a learning experience for all of us, because all of us are in need of a little bit of spiritual growth. So everybody, now I'm empathizing with everybody who's even at the table. The person that I don't get along with, you know, we all need to grow a little bit spiritually. We're all slaves. We all are waiting for Mashiach. So let's all try to improve a little bit on this situation. And then let's just do one more. We'll have to stop and we'll have to leave the next part. I thought I could do this all in one session, but I see I can't. So let's move on now. And let's do one more part. One more part is Manishtan. Manishtan halayla zemi kalalei los. So how is this going to help us with any of this? So the Kli Yakar learns a beautiful pshat in the Manishtana. Manishtana halayla zemi kalalei los. He says the pshat in Manishtana halayla. Laila, night, is symbolic of golos. It's symbolic of golos. Right? So again, we haven't yet begun the Magid. But really the child is asking these questions. The child's asking this question. Child, now you gotta look at this as a real story. There's the biggest problem with the Manishtana is we think it's like, you know, your son's grade one sitter party. It's a sitter party, you know. We're trying to get nachas, but you know, that's a big mistake. When the child's asking you questions, you know, and I understand it's a big trap that any new young parent or grandparent. Oh, my son says the Manishtana. Ah, what nachas. Yeah. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have nachas. Baruch Hashem, he's at your Seder table and not in the worst place. But once you get over that euphoria that you have a grandchild who can say the Manishtana, now let's really understand what's going on. It's not just, you know, a school play. If it's part of the Seder, it's a very important part of the Seder. It's not just, you know, when your kid gets up at the Seder party, he's memorized a few lines and he's memorized a line. Very nice. He understands how to say this and that. Goodbye. It's really just a showcase for the school to show the school has taught the kids something. You know? And that's why schools are teaching them all these things. Okay, fine, let it be. That's good. But that doesn't belong at the Seder. That's not. Your child or your grandchild is asking you very pointed questions. Because you have to remember, children are very astute observers. And they observe things much better than adults. Because adults, we get used to doing things, so we don't even question what we're doing. You know, you make a mistake 20 years ago and just keep living that mistake for 20 years. You get in a routine, you just do things. A child is a tabula rasa. A child looks at something as if he's never seen it before. The child, you know, sees what goes on in the house. And he's asking you some very, very difficult questions that really, when the kid's finished saying the Manishtana, you should be crying to what he's noticing that's going in the house. Remember, every Jew has to feel like he left Egypt tonight. That means you're coming into the Seder, not the holiest roller. You're coming to the Seder, you can't even eat a piece of meat yet! You're such a Baal Lashon Hara, your mouth is in exile. You understand? We hope at the end of the Seder. But the kid's noticing what's going on in the beginning of the Seder. And he's asking all kinds of questions. It can be understand on all kinds of levels, but now you understand, you know, he's saying, why are we dipping? Why are we just dipping? Why are we dipping? And you think, well, we're dipping because really a whole year long we don't take mitzvahs too seriously. Hopefully maybe tonight we will take it seriously. Oy vey, he notices that we're not doing things so well. I'm dipping what? What am I dipping? A little karpas and Salzwasser? Why? Because I'm just the same as a behemoth. That's what he's noticing. I'm living like a behemoth. Right. That's what he's asking me. And really, he's asking all kinds of questions. The rabbi, so the Kli Yakar explains, halayla, layla. Layla means night, but layla also means golus. Golus, exile. Manishtana halayla zemi kol halaylos. Why is this golus abba that we're in now, the golus that we are in now, why is it worse mikol halaylos from all the other exiles we've ever been in? Every other exile stopped, but this exile still hasn't finished. Why is this exile not finished? Abba, you're the one to give me answers, my father. What is going on that the exile is still not finished? And the child is making some suggestions. You know, for example, some are easier to read than others. But the second one, it's, Rabbi, it's a little hard for me to pay attention here. Rabbi, it's a little bit, conflicting the noise. So anyway, let's say, for example, the second one. Shebecholos anu ochlim sha'ar yirakos. Va'alayla hazeh, you know, all moror. Right? So in other words, you know, a whole year long, you know, we don't, in other exiles, we didn't really run after money so much. We're happy with sha'ar yirakos, some vegetables. But now we run after the money so much that our night is only moror. It's just bitter. The whole, after working a whole day to make more money and more money and more money, do you think you enjoy the pleasures you have? We used to be happy in other exiles with sha'ar yirakos, just simple vegetables. And everybody was happy. And then finally the exile finished. But we're so running after the money. And it's such a bitter life. It's such a bitter life. Maybe that's why we're still in exile, Abba. Abba, you'd have never, no time to sit and learn with me, Abba. Because your life is moror. That's your kid's asking you. He's saying, you know what? Why is this? Why do you not have time for me? Because you're making a parnasa and it's so moror. You have no time to talk to me, Abba. I want to learn how to talk. I want to learn how to learn Torah. I want you to teach me Torah. But all you can tell me is it's hard to make a living. I'm working so hard. But I see that, you know, why does it have to be that way? Why can't we be happy with sha'ar yirakos? Other vegetables like in the other exiles. And those other exiles would have ended. And this exile has not ended. In other exiles, we wouldn't even dip one time. And now we dip twice. Means to say we're so into taivas, into all our physical pleasures. Is that all we can talk about a whole day long, Abba, is physical pleasures? That's what we're talking about? And then when you talk about physical pleasures, you start talking about Lashon Hara as well? Or how about a whole year long we could just sit on a chair? You know, maybe a little time we'll relax, but now we're all reclining. Reclining means I'm a big shot. I recline all the time. I always recline. I'm always a big shot. Everybody has gaiva. When you gaiva, you talk Lashon Hara. That's why this exile is worse. This exile is worse is because there's no unity amongst the Jewish people. Why? Either because we're running after money that's making our lives bitter, we're running after pleasures, or we're running after our own gaiva. And that finally manifests itself, although he says it as an illusion. Sometimes we eat chametz or matzah. Here, matzah from the word meat sweet, to fight with each other. The word matzah also means meat sweet, to fight. He says, I always see is people fighting. That's what using our tongues for. Really what your child is telling you is simple observations of the house. And he's hitting you right between the eyes. He says, Abba, we haven't had Mashiach for a long time. The second temple was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, because of baseless hatred. So why is it this way? Why is this, all these things happening? Does it have something to do with the way we're talking to each other? Your son, your daughter is telling you words that are the emes. And now you have to realize that maybe I have to change the way I speak to him. And when your kid says, Abba, can you sit down and read me a story? I'm very busy with my bitter moror, my bitter parnasa. Mm-hmm. And if it's not so bitter, I'm planning my cruise to the Bahamas while you're going to stay with the nanny behind. Or I'm just fighting with somebody because I have a big gaiva issue. And that your kid said, but you don't ever talk to me. And then when you hear your kid telling you that, then you say, maybe it's time to really talk a little bit better. Now you're ready for Magid. Now you're going to start talking. And you're going to talk the whole night. And you're going to take care of the cheshbon that you wasted so much time. And now to the tikkun for the hours and the hours and the hours where you were talking Lashon Hara. And you didn't spend hours and hours. At least one night you'll be true to yourself. And you'll make a tikkun, you'll show how much you love Hashem, and you're going to spend hours talking about the beautiful things that Hashem does in your life. And that we're going to have to do part two next week. I thought I could do this all in one sitting. I see it didn't quite work, but I think that's definitely enough to get you going. And then we'll go through other parts of the Haggadah to show how these parts specifically reflect that.